Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The solution to all this stuff is for the individual to exercise what I call the liberty muscle, right? Like it atrophies over time in the same way that our culture atrophies if it's not protected. And, just saying, and the easiest way to do this, because again, I'll say this again, the right is natural. The rights that you have are natural. They're not granted by a government or anything. So just saying no when the government tries to infringe on them, that is your collective power. That's the collective power of America, is to say no to stupid bullshit.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We've got a special guest today. There's a lot of accolades here, so let's just say CEO of Born Primitive, Bear Handlin. How's it going?
Doing pretty good. How you doing?
Well, I'm living the dream, you know. It's a great day to be alive, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think everybody that listens to this show has heard of Born Primitive, but let's go back a little farther into your history. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Northwest Indiana, a town called Valpo.
Valpo, and, never heard of that.
Yeah, Northwest corner, call it the region. Midwest guy, and then ended up going out to the East Coast for school. Now I'm in Virginia Beach.
And what was it? You've got a pretty interesting trajectory here. I would say atypical, probably, to go from the Ivy League to the military. So how did that, what do you think it was about your upbringing that made that happen? When you graduated high school, I guess, was it that education was a priority, or you were playing football as well? Was it that, or what was it that made you decide to go to the Ivy League, I guess?
Honestly, my brother went to Yale and played football. So he was 4 years ahead of me. So I think that's what planted the seed initially. But we were just normal Midwestern dudes, went to public high school, sports was a big part of our lives growing up. I thought it was an opportunity. I definitely wanted to play ball somewhere. But then once my brother got in and was playing, I kind of, realized the opportunity it might create, after college, if I could get an Ivy League degree. So kind of honed in on, hitting the books hard and hitting the weight room hard. And, that was kind of the front side focus goal, when I was in high school. And that's what we did. We got it done. I was actually, before football really developed, the plan was to enlist in the military out of high school. I was in eighth grade when 9/11 happened. So that was kind of the initial plan. But once football developed and, I thought I could go get a degree and then do it when I got out, I thought it was a pretty good deal. That's kind of what my parents persuaded me to do. And that's what we did.
And that's a pretty expensive education. Were you there on a scholarship?
So with the Ivy League schools, they don't actually give athletic scholarships. Mm-hmm. They will give you financial aid based on like your personal situation. But basically what they do is it helps you get into the university. Now, it's not like, we're going there and doing basket weaving. There's some schools where like you could get a 2.0 and get in and play football there. The academic standard is still very high, there's people with perfect SAT scores not getting into Ivy League schools. Actually, a lot of people with perfect SAT scores that aren't getting in. So what they do is they say, hey, assuming you meet a minimum academic standard, which is still a very high bar, as a football, you know, the football department can give you one of their 30 spots every year to, you know, kind of cut the line. And then, they, you know, football says, hey, this is one of my guys. He meets the threshold, so put him through admissions. You know, that being said, I was still, you know, fifth in my class out of like 550 people and, you know, had like a 4.3 whatever GPA. So it's not like I was, you know, slacking off on the books, but I don't think I definitely would not have gotten in on my own merit if it weren't for football, because I mean, the people there are just absolute freaks.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is, I would say pretty competitive to get into a school like that, regardless of what your background might be. Now they've had some issues with DEI and bullshit, but you know that I don't think that was really going on back when you were in. Not to date you or anything, but you're a little bit older than this current generation. And then you graduate from Yale, and then you go to the Navy. What made you decide to join the military? Is that another, you're following your brother that way as well, or is it another family member, or what happened there?
No, that was just patriotism, man. Like I said, I was in eighth grade when 9/11 happened. And, you know, a young, probably what, 14-year-old kid. And, you know, that really stuck with me, obviously, like it did most of us. But I remember going from home from school that day. They did a special delivery of the newspaper that afternoon. And I cut out that newspaper, that headline. And that newspaper has been with me ever since. It went with me to college. It was always pinned up above my desk in high school. You know, it, everywhere I've gone, I even took it on deployments. You know, it's still above my squat rack in my garage, and it just says, you know, never forget or whatever, you know. And so that stuck with me, particularly seeing people in another part of the world celebrating in the streets, burning American flag, as if, you know, you know, it was almost like it was like a World Cup celebration or something. It was just completely insane that we were a country mourning, and then there were a bunch of grown men on the other side of the world that were celebrating this. And at a young age, I realized that there's a group of people out there that want to destroy our way of life. And again, how does a 14-year-old, you know, young man respond to that? Well, testosterone's flowing. I wanted to eventually have the opportunity to do something about that. So that's when the seed was planted of, hey, I definitely am going to join the service at some point. That was really the main reason. I don't come from a major military family. My grandfathers were both officers in World War II. One was a major in the Marines, and the other was a captain in the Army. It was actually an amputee medic. So there's a little family history there, but not this super long lineage. Just something I wanted to do. I felt honestly an obligation.
Mm. And what was it like? I mean, you must have... SEALs are, well, you've got the hair for it, I'll say that, just out of the gate. You got the hair for it. But SEALs do like to talk shit, too. And if you come in, you don't want to be different, typically, in any kind of, not at first, anyways. Once you get settled in, it's good to be different a little bit. But coming in as a fucking officer may be different, but coming in with an Ivy League education, did you get harassed for that a little bit? Because I would have fucking harassed you a little bit, to be honest.
Honestly, I did a pretty good job flying under the radar on that. I knew, while I knew the man I was, like there's a stereotype of what an Ivy League guy is. I definitely was far from that. I mean, I grew up in Indiana, went to public school, right? Like, so I couldn't be, you know, I would wear boots and a Bass Pro hat to class with a fish hook on. You know what I mean? Like, I was not your what you would think an Ivy League guy would be. But I flew under the radar. It was actually until third phase. They didn't actually figure out that I was a Yale graduate. Our OIC was actually a Princeton lacrosse player. So he took a bunch of heat for me. And then finally the gig was up at some point and they figured it out. You know, I dealt with it. But it wasn't that big of a deal. I think by then you had earned some credibility and they knew that the type of dude you were. And then, yeah, guys bust your balls in the platoon a little bit, but it's the same thing. As long as you're a hard dude and you're not acting like that, like they don't give a shit. So,
yeah. I mean, I got fucked with a little bit for being enlisted and having multiple degrees and shit. They're like, oh, what do you think? You're a smart guy. I'm like, I guess, man, I don't know. Like, well, can we just go fucking blow some shit up? This is stupid. Tell me about your time in the Navy. Where were you exactly?
I was out here on the East Coast in Virginia Beach. You know, we go out to San Diego for the initial training. Was out in Rhode Island first for Officer Candidate School. And then, got stationed out here. Been out here since 2016. Was over at SEAL Team 2. Nothing major, man. You know, I missed pretty much everything. So a whole lot of training, and then a whole lot of nothing after that. So that's kind of, what the situation we're in at the moment too. So, I think had I done it out of high school, my career would have been a whole lot different. But I waited, and I actually worked, right when I graduated college, I actually worked for Red Bull for 4 years. So I delayed it even more than that. So by the time I got in, most of the conflict was done with. So, did just under 8 years. It was a good time. I think, the biggest thing was just the community of guys that I got to be a part of and just being in that environment. As you probably know, I think 90% of this is just surrounding yourself with the right kind of people. And that was an absolute privilege to be around that every day. A bunch of type A guys, hard hitting dudes that, demand a very high standard. And I think that made me a better individual from just being a part of it.
Sure, yeah, but you don't have like if you're not deploying and shit, you don't have an outlet for it. I feel like our type, and that's to be honest, I got out in 2010. I left the 82nd Airborne in 2010 for that reason. Like our next two rotations were going to be to go train Afghan and then Iraqi police and shit. I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that. That's fucking dumb. At the time, I think 9, 10, 11 was kind of the height of the green on blue bullshit too, where they were rolling frags into fucking chow halls and shit like that. It didn't seem very interesting to me, but I did like it. Part of it was self-awareness and preservation too. I knew that if, with my attitude and my predilection for goonery, I suppose, if we were spending most of our time back in garrison, I was going to get myself in trouble. You know what I mean? How was it? Like, it's gotta suck to fucking, and I hear this from dudes, who were in, tier one, tier two units before the GWAT. They would get sporadic deployments maybe here and there, but for the most part, it was a lot of training. That's gotta suck, to be honest. And not because you didn't get to go, well, I mean, it does suck because you didn't get to go fuck shit up, but, it sucks at the time as well, right? Because how do you blow off steam when you go fucking like it's like you go to football practice for 7 years and then you never get to play a game. You know what I mean? That sucks.
Yeah, it definitely was hard. I kind of use the analogy, the football practice is actually a perfect one. I've used the analogy before. It's like imagine getting drafted in the NFL and you're a first round pick, but the commissioner decides whether a season is played or not, and you don't know whether a season is played. So you just do this perpetual preseason camp. And then, you get to February and then Goodell's like, ah, no season this year. Roll to next year. So but keep prepare for next season. And then you actually never get to play in a game, right? So it's like, were you ever actually an NFL player? I mean, yeah, technically, I guess, but you didn't actually, get it on. So, that's tough. The guys would say, you can't chase it. Comes in waves. A lot of us in that time period, you were in a wave where it wasn't active. That could change tomorrow. You never know when we're sitting on September 10th. And especially with what we have going on the southern border. I think highly likely there's going to be something that's going to happen in the next couple of years. And guys that came from my line of work are going to get real active again.
Yeah, sure.
So it's one of those things, man. You do what you can, but yeah, it is. It was hard, particularly when you're training here in the States. We would have like an 18-month workup and then a 6-month deployment. You're gone a lot. So a lot of guys, have wives and kids and stuff, and to justify being, training all over the country and being gone as much as we are, and then to go, for example, to UCOM and just sit around for 6 months away from your family, it seemed completely ridiculous, and a complete waste of resources. Now I understand readiness, and you have to be postured to, so you don't just react to stuff. You need to, be proactive to it. I definitely get it, but I also think the government wastes a hell of a lot of money just sending us to places to sit around and collect per diem, when we could be used, for example, what's put us on the southern border, right? I think 1,000 SEALs would be pretty damn useful on the southern border right now, right? So that's how I always looked at it. I was like, man, they train us to do all this, and then we're going to sit in Germany or, guys sitting in Africa, wherever they're going. It's like, man, what a letdown. But like you said, you can't chase it. The job comes at you, when it comes, and when it's not, you just got to roll with it.
Yeah, I agree. And it is like I'm a I don't know if I'm a hippie or what, but I do like, and maybe it's because I'm just so distrustful of government, but I feel like nature always kind of provides the solution to things, right? Like we live in this, I've described it in the past as like motivation and purpose, especially for a man, like a like people like us aren't afraid to die, so you have to weaponize both fear and hope at the same time, right? It's the push-pull of life. So I'm afraid of letting my men down, letting my family down. Those things are things that I don't want to happen. So I put that behind me and let it chase me. And then I see my hopes and dreams, my goals, and I put it in front of me and I chase that, right? It's kind of the push-pull of life. And I think it permeates through all of life, no matter what the situation is. And that's the natural symbiosis. That's like the gravity and nuclear fusion in a star that holds it together or whatever. I mean, you can map that onto pretty much anything. And then I think there might be some kind of sociological element to that as well. We've all heard this, I guess it's a poem that hard times make strong men make easy times make weak men, right? We've all heard that. And it's cyclical, right? It's on like a 200-year cycle, basically. Although it seems to be getting sped up these days. But I see these problems. I see fatherless homes. I see young men without purpose. I see rampant violence in our country. And I see what is an effective invasion at our border. And I see, let's call it 50,000 infantry and special operators veterans who are just out hanging out. You know what I mean? Like fucking doing normal jobs right now. Like I feel like these people who have learned paramilitary infrastructure and leadership skills and how to be really calm under chaos, and then the ancillary benefit of having weapons training and survival training and shit like that, just in case shit goes sideways. And I see solutions to problems that we have right now, right? But I don't see a whole lot of will amongst the people who are kind of organizing all this stuff to utilize any of that. And it makes you wonder, at what point does this stop being incompetence and start being like an intentional destruction of what we have here?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think about it fairly often. It's like, okay, if I were an enemy of the United States and I wanted to destroy it, what would I do? You know what I mean? And when you really look at what's going on, it's hard not to scratch your head and think, is that, are we literally witnessing that in real time? First, let's demasculinize all the youth, right? So, the guys that are going to be following in the footsteps behind us that are now, 12, 15 years old, by the time they're young men and, in their early 20s, they're a completely different breed of man, right? And also let's get them to hate their country and be ashamed of their heritage and, the history. Let's get a bunch of people coming in through the southern border. Like there's just so many things. Oh, let's be able to control social media so we can tell them what to think and what is bad, and let's be able to have the ability to cancel people that are speaking common sense values. So it is really scary, man. I think what we need right now is just for normal people, men and women, just to have the courage to stand up for what they know is right. And we need to get back to some goddamn common sense. It seems like every time you flip the TV on, it's just another completely outrageous thing that you're seeing. I mean, to the point where if we have the president of the United States calling someone an illegal, the fact that he has to apologize the next day because his own party is so outraged that that is apparently a derogatory term when someone, that person, literally murdered a girl. Are we really? I mean, have we gotten to that point where we're so sensitive that we think that's, who cares if it's a derogatory term? The guy murdered someone. So who gives a shit what we're calling him? But we're more concerned about that than the actual problem. That, you got people in Central America sending all their misfits across our border on purpose, and not to mention, people from, the Middle East that we now know, which, the Congress just gave the thing the other day. And of course, we knew that. That's not rocket science stuff. If you leave your back door open and you tell the whole world, hey, I'm going to leave my back door open and I'm not going to tell, or, we're not going to do anything about it, and hey, I have a bunch of cash in the kitchen, feel free to grab it. What do you think is going to happen? Eventually, people are going to start coming in your back door and grabbing shit, right? It's the same thing. Our enemies in the Middle East know that. They'd be idiots not to completely exploit that and set up for something maybe major. I hope I'm wrong, but if I were them, man, what an opportunity that presents.
Yeah.
So it's crazy, man. You know, I try to reflect on, okay, has every guy our age always said this about the direction of the country and we're just a repeat of, oh, like people are getting soft and this and that? I really don't think that's the case. I think this is something different. And I think what's hard to distinguish is this truly something deliberate that is being created by external actors that have infiltrated us? Or is it literally just maybe people on one side of the political spectrum that have gotten so hyper-focused on all of this, these insane policies that, you know, they're just obsessed with it. And you know, you can't offend anyone. There's only the oppressor and the oppressed. You know, that if you're successful, you're naturally the oppressor. And if you're not, you're the oppressed. And
well, it doesn't even matter if you specifically are successful. If the group that you belong to has appeared to have been historically successful, then you're the oppressor, even if you personally are not doing well, right? So, like, for example, a poor person in rural West Virginia or some shit, that person is the oppressor at birth. You know what I mean? It's like, this is the dumbest period in all of human history, frankly. This episode is brought to you by GhostBed. GhostBed.com/Drinker Bros. Go there today and get 50% off site-wide. All their mattresses, all the sheets, everything. They've got the GhostBed Classic. They've got the GhostBed 3D Matrix. They've got the GhostBed Lux. And now they've got the new one, the GhostBed Flex Hybrid. All these are cooling mattresses. They're the best in the business. They also have the new technology that we've been looking for all this time. Well, not we, just Joel, which is the RV mattress. Now, if you've got one of these things, you know that you can't find a mattress that fits them appropriately, at least not a good one. And the ones that come with them are terrible. So if you're you know, an RV person, you definitely want to jump on that. And by the way, they got the best pillows in the business. You've heard me say it before, but I travel with these things. That's how good they are. It's kind of a pain in the ass, but not as bad as sleeping on hotel pillows, I'll tell you that much. So go to ghostbed.com/drinkerbros today. Use the code Ghost or Drinker Bros at checkout. You're going to get 50% off all the mattresses. Check them out today. We've been with them for a while. I've got them all over my house. You know they're good. So my best advice here is go for the 3D Matrix. It's the most comfortable bed I've ever slept on in my life. Go get it today. Go to ghostbed.com/Drinker Bros. Use the code Drinker Bros. You're going to get 50% off. That's 50% off. You're not going to get a better deal. Because we have all of the, we have all the tech. And I think the 60s through the 90s, we were kind of coasting. Everything was going well, but we were doing a lot of stupid shit, right? Like, we introduced fake food, like corn syrup and things like that. The Marxist bullshit started to leak into the schools. We have endocrine disruptors all over the place. We didn't know, right, until people started paying attention to it in the like late 90s, early 2000s. Like, oh shit, testosterone's way down. We should probably look into this, right? By the way, it's since 2001 down about 40%, right? And meaning that the average 21-year-old today has the same level of testosterone that the 65-year-old had in 2001. I don't think that was intentional. I think it was lazily adding endocrine disruptors to every part of our life, like water, food. It's all over the place now, right? The receipts that we handle have endocrine disruptors in them. But the bullshit about demonizing culture and masculinity is real and intentional, and that to me is where the idea of incompetence breaks down. It's like that doesn't, you can't use incompetence to explain that anymore, because it is that in out group stuff that we've talked about in sociology for years, mapped onto the what you said, which is the oppressor oppressee mindset, right? It's like, and when you set things up that way, This is a maybe a weird analogy for people, but this is exactly what's happening. Anybody that has kids knows this. Your three-year-old falls down, right? And you say, hey, get back up, buddy. Then they'll get back up and go on about their business. But if you rush over them and like, oh, are you okay? They'll cry, right? Because that is social validation they're receiving. And you've just turned that kid into a temporary victim. That we've done that to all of society now. Right, we've changed the social currency from toughness, resilience, and being a good human being to being a fucking victim. and people are playing into it, right? And now it's the outrage Olympics. It's who can be the biggest victim now. That's the fucking path we're on. And it is retarded, frankly. It is the dumbest. We are in the dumbest period in human history right now.
Yeah, and the problem with that victim mentality is, like, it forces all of these people to see through a lens of being a victim, right? Whether they are or not. It's kind of like, you know, that red light you always catch going to work every day, and you throw your hands up every time you hit it, but you don't even realize when it's green and you drive right through that light, right? But every time you get red, you go, God damn it, I always get this red light. I hate this light, right? You have conditioned your mind to only recognize when the light is red, and when it's green, you go through. That's the same thing with the victim mentality, man. It's crippling these people. It's by design. You know, this is just my personal opinion, but I think it's being pushed so hard from politicians because that's how they get votes, right? They want you to depend on them. You know, every 4 years when the voting comes around, you know, who are they going to vote for? They're going to vote for the people that tell them, oh, you need us and we're going to give you all the free shit. Instead of the tough love approach of, hey, you got to work your butt off and you got to get what you earn. There's nothing given in this country. That would be the approach we need to take, but that doesn't help you get votes, right? No one wants to be told what they need to hear. They want to be told, oh yeah, you're totally right. You deserve this welfare and you deserve this and you deserve that. And it's just gotten completely insane. I really don't know what the fix is, honestly, because when you look at who controls the narrative, you know, 90% of the media is controlled by one voice. Up until Musk taking X, every social media outlet was completely controlled by that. It's like anywhere you get your information, it just reaffirms this bullshit. And for a while there, if you're someone that speaks out against it, guess what? On Instagram or Facebook or whatever, they can literally just turn the dial down on you. Like, okay, well, enough of this guy, even though he's speaking common sense. Let's shut him off because I want the everyday Joe Schmo that's scrolling on his Instagram feed to get the perception that maybe the thoughts he had are a fringe belief, and we want him to stop thinking that way. And we want him to say, oh, damn, like, is what I think controversial? I better not speak out because they just canceled that guy on Instagram that I, you know, thought had a pretty common sense approach to this, problem set. It's just completely wild, man, particularly for the people that have made their livings off of social media and YouTube. The fact that they've been, you know, deplatformed and you know, that they can't make a living anymore because of some of these beliefs. That's a real concern for someone that, you know, could have achieved real influence over everyday people that are trying to, you know, figure out where the truth is. So there's major incentives to just get on board with this new narrative and shut your mouth and not be vocal. But I personally think people are starting to get fed up. And I think, you know, fear is contagious, but so is courage. And I think we're finally starting to get people to say, fuck this. What the hell is going on here? This has gotten completely insane. And that gives me a little bit of hope.
Yeah, there's definitely a reorganizing of people going on right now. It's been interesting to see, to be honest. Like, a lot of people who were very wrong and very authoritarian during the COVID bullshit are even kind of like starting to come over to the other side now. People who had Trump derangement syndrome are like, all right, well, maybe we should at least have somebody in office that gives a fuck about our country, even if he's kind of a dick. I'm seeing more and more of that. Like Michael Rappaport, who is been just a loudmouth leftist for a very long time, has had to admit that he's wrong about a lot of stuff. And it's interesting to see, because most people, to his credit, most people aren't admitting that they were wrong. They're just like pretending like it never happened. But I'll even take that, to be honest. As long as you're reasonable, I don't really give a shit what you believe, right? Because people are going to have, like, if I'm somebody that has a particular set of issues or circumstances in life, I'm probably going to lean towards a political or apolitical solution, depending on how you feel, that supports the narrative of my fucking circumstance, right? That's how human beings operate, obviously. Like, if I'm hungry, I'm going to eat, right? I'm not, and you know, the problem is when you're hungry and you want to eat and you force everybody else to do the same thing. Or when you're not hungry and you're like, well, we don't need to eat right now. It's like, no, well, you don't, right? But there are a lot of other people do. So this is why, you know, you ask before what the solution to this stuff is. The solution to, and I'll take it back to the yin yang of life, the push pull, whatever you want to call it, right? The relationship between gravity and nuclear fusion. It's like decentralization is the counter to centralized authority, right? So that's how it takes place in politics. The way that, so the sun is turning hydrogen into helium and so on and so forth. And it's this massive nuclear explosion, but the force of its mass is keeping it in a circle, right? Or in a sphere, rather. That's how it works. And people who want to manipulate society for one way or another, even for good, sometimes like people who are politicians or business leaders or whatever it is, they're doing their thing. And then the decentralized power of the small person, like the individual, pushes back against that, right? But it only works if we all push together. We don't necessarily have to have the same beliefs about things, but we do have to have a belief in individual liberty, right? Because if you don't believe in that, then you don't, that's what America is all about. It's federalism, right? Like our system of government was set up to have a weak central government and then states' rights and then individual rights, right? And all the documentation up until a certain point, until let's say the middle of the 19th century, wasn't about granting people rights. It was about limiting the power of the government, right? That was all of our foundational documents are about limiting government power. They're not about, like, the First Amendment doesn't say that you have the right to free speech. It says the government doesn't have the right to stop you from using free speech, right? That's not the same thing. Those are very different things. Maybe it seems like a banal distinction to some people, but the point of it is that the right is natural, you know what I mean? And it is enumerating it, and it's limiting the government. But we flipped sometime in the middle of the 19th century to start making laws that fuck with people individually, right? And people don't like it very much. And, you know, sometimes it was for good reasons. Like, I think Reconstruction, rebuilding our economies after slavery was probably a good idea, integrating the black people that were here into the economy and the communities was a good idea. But that drove politics from the middle 1860s until the first decade or so of the 20th century, even. So, like, you know, a very long time, well beyond slavery. As a matter of fact, Rutherford B. Hayes, essentially with the help of the Associated Press and Western Union, stole an election in the last decade of the 19th century, specifically for that purpose, to stop Reconstruction from happening, right? So the solution to all this stuff is for the individual to exercise what I call the liberty muscle, right? Like it atrophies over time in the same way that our culture atrophies if it's not protected. And, you know, just saying, and the easiest way to do this, because again, I'll say this again, the right is natural. The rights that you have are natural. They're not granted by a government or anything. So just saying no when the government tries to infringe on them, that is your collective power. That's the collective power of America, is to say no to stupid bullshit. And the thing that's hard for people is that kind of power comes with responsibility, right? Like you don't get to just live unmolested throughout your entire life unless you're willing to perform the responsibilities required of you to secure those rights and to secure them for the people around you as well, right? And that's the problem. People want their hot pockets. They want their iPads. They don't want to do hard work. They don't want to fucking take personal responsibility for shit. And this is what you get. You get an authoritarian government without question. Any time you let people in power go on about their business without being checked, they will amass more power, amass more wealth, and then use it against you. That's how it always is. In every civilization in human history, that's how it's worked.
Yeah, and I think looking at it from the politician's angle, because I've wrestled with this, because I originally thought, okay, all these politicians, they're just literally insane, and they believe these things, right? And they're just like, I you know, being a kid from Indiana, I just can't fathom, you know, some of their policies, and I just think it's completely insane. But that's actually not it. They're not insane. They're actually, they're very smart and intelligent people, and there are much bigger reasons for why they're doing these things, right? And I would say follow the money. It all comes down to following the money, right? And then also controlling us, and that's, you know, why you see what's happening with all this ESG stuff in these Fortune 500 companies. It all comes back to just following the money, right? I don't know how versed you are on this. We did a podcast on this. We had an executive from Anheuser-Busch, former executive, come on the show and, you know, walk us through a lot of this. But, you know, I don't think a lot of these Democratic politicians truly believe this. You know, if you could get them in their living room with no recordings going on, hey, do you actually have a problem that President Biden called that guy who murdered that girl an illegal? No, hell no, they don't, right? But they have to play ball. But I think for me, I think a lot of them are just trying to, and I think, you know, to be fair, I think all of our politicians do this. So I'm obviously talking about the Democrats right now, but I think our kind of particularly Congress as a whole is completely effed. And it's created a dynamic where they are driven by, you know, building their bank accounts and not actually, you know, ruling for what the people need. But, you know, you look at a lot of these things that are pushed down in law, and then you realize that these people have hedged their investments in front of these new policies. And then you look at their portfolios. That's another thing. I don't know how this is not a bigger story. When you look at some of the portfolios of some of our of people in Congress, and again, I think it's both sides, the fact that they're like, their portfolio's up more than like Warren Buffett and these guys by like 5X. And then they claim they don't insider trade. And it's like, all right, you literally are the people being able to write policy that affects industries, right? So let's take, climate change, for example. All of a sudden they're subsidizing all these green industries, right? Solar and wind and all these things. But what do you know? Oh, ahead of those big subsidies that they launched, they've positioned their investments to capitalize on a subsidy, right? Because what a subsidy does is it takes something that isn't naturally being achieved in an efficient market, which is capitalism, and you're injecting cash, so it creates an efficiency. So maybe, you know, a solar panel company couldn't be profitable before, but as soon as you tell every citizen, hey, you get a $15,000 tax credit for getting solar panels, well, you've created now a demand through, capital injection into that market, right? So if you know that law is coming down and you're Nancy Pelosi and you have your brother-in-law on the board of the solar panel company, right, and you know it's going to hit, I mean, and I don't even know if that's a specific example. I think the Nancy Pelosi stuff is pretty hilarious. I think year to date, her portfolio is up 79% right now. And I think last year in 2023, it netted out in the 60s, right, when the market was like, you know, 9 or something like that. And if you study any of the market stuff, you talk to Warren Buffett, I think, like, you know, less than like 1 out of 20 will beat the market in a 5-year horizon. You know what I mean? Just naturally, like, it's very hard to beat the market. All of these Congress people that apparently are supposed to be full-time, you know, congressmen are somehow having these immaculate portfolios that are returning nearly 100% year over year. So, you know, I digress a little bit, but I think it's not that their values are that different. I personally feel like it's the way they keep power by, you know, making people rely on them, but also it's a way they get rich. You know, they push policies that they don't really believe in, but on the backside of it, there's a huge financial opportunity and they're exploiting that. And I think that's all it comes down to. And I don't know how we could truly ever get out of that. I think term limits would be a start. You know, when you have some of these people, again, both sides of the aisle, that have been there for freaking 45 years, they know the game, they know everyone in town, they know how to work the lobby. I mean, it's crazy, man. But if you had told a guy, hey, man, you got 12 years tops, or you got 8 years, whatever it is, and then you're out, well, then you're going to try to do good for your constituents, and you're not going to be playing around with all the bullshit and playing the long game, trying to become a freaking billionaire by the end of your congressional career. So, you know, that's just my opinion. I'm not super versed on it, but I think follow the money, man. That's what all this boils down to.
Yeah, I mean, it takes one of two forms. One is just people compromising to get more pork spending in their districts, right? Which is that's a very old way in American politics that has been problematic for the population, you know. And the other way is what you're describing, which is pretty rampant. There's a group of people in Congress, in both houses, who managed to beat the S&P average every single year, right? Nancy Pelosi's one of them. And it's not just Democrats. Crenshaw is one of them. He said some stupid shit in public about how are you going to get the best and brightest people to serve in Congress if they can't make money while they're there? Like, are you fucking out of your mind, dude? Or who would even think something like that, much less say it out loud? But, you know, the at the end of the day, as much as we like capitalism and our federalist system of government, there's no form of government that scales indefinitely, right? I mean, it's, again, we're talking about this this balance between yin and yang, or push-pull, whatever it is. That's why we created a system that's designed to be stronger at the base, just like any physical structure should be stronger at the base than it is at the top. I mean, we're playing Jenga with our society now by printing money. And the fact is that when the state is large, the individual is small, right? And that we kind of set this up to be the other way, and it didn't take very long. I mean, we're still a relatively young country compared to Europe and Asia. We're a pretty young country.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So it didn't take very long, and very successful as well. So despite our youth and our success, it didn't take very long for what always happens with governments to happen here. All forms of government eventually become machines to extract labor and wealth from the population, right? That was the case in Rome. It was the case, and it's the case now with our government. People are, the weirdest thing about it to me is how, I guess, the old stalwart Republican is incredulous about so-called conservatives who are part of this uniparty thing that's going on. But that's how it always happens. It's like we have these terms like rhino, Republican in name only. That's a meaningless phrase. That doesn't mean shit. It's like, what does it even mean to be a Republican anymore? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's – if you look down the list of the Republican talking points – what part of it is about limited government, right? Like, when was the last time Republicans in office shrank government? I can't think of any time since before World War II that happened, right? So, you know, we have to stop playing on teams, right? We have to stop hero worship. We have to stop pretending like all this is okay, because it's not. I mean, and, you know, There's only one way to win that game, and that's to not play it, right? Like, if you play that game, you're like, oh, I support this politician or I support that politician. It's like, all right, cool. So you support what exactly? You support just whatever's on their bullet list? You know what I mean? That's fucking stupid. We don't want to be a la carte voters, I guess. It's hard for people to do that for some reason. I don't understand why. It's like, if, you know, like, in November, Trump is going to run against Biden, and I'm going to vote for Trump because Biden's a fucking retard, right? But I don't like – Trump does stupid shit all the time, and I'm going to criticize him for it. Banning bump stocks, what he let Fauci run roughshod over this country and shut it down, all that stuff. He's made major mistakes, right? But he's a better option than Biden for sure. So what do you do? Like, what's the reasonable thing to do there? It's to say, hey – you're the better option here, but don't pull that bullshit again, right? I mean, that, like, you don't have to fucking just go along with whatever the guy says because he's on your team. That's fucking dumb. I mean, think about going through a shoot house. What, a guy's on your team and he fucks up? So what? You just pat on the back. It's like, oh, he's my guy. Don't worry about it. Like, no, you fucking correct his bullshit.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, I think bottom line is we need a unifier, right? Because I also, as pessimistic as some of my viewpoints might seem, I also think that most people are still pretty reasonable people and can kind of see through a lot of this. And there's an incredible opportunity to unify kind of the masses. But the way the system's set up, it's the opposite. And that's what we see. So I think ultimately we need someone that can come in and really lean into that. But yeah, to your point, the people that are making the rules benefit from the status quo, right? That's how they stay in power and that's how they get paid. So I don't really know how that changes. I think you would need a true kind of renegade to come in that really just wants to flip it on its head. And, you know, I totally agree on the fact that we need to hold our own side accountable too. So, you know, if you're a Democrat and you think your party's putting out some crazy shit, like CNN, it's okay to get on there and critique your party. Same thing like Fox. All right, if the Republicans are putting out some bullshit, like, it's call them out. Like, no side is going to have perfect policy ever. And I think you're spot on there. There's more credibility when it's not always just like, you know, everything the Democrats do, the CNN worships. And then same thing on Fox. It's like everything the Republicans do, it's like the perfect thing. Very rarely do you see them get on there and say, hey, like, you know, maybe this was a miss. But I, you know, again, I'll be probably hold my breath if we ever see any real accountability or ownership when a side does make a mistake. I mean, how refreshing would it be to get in a state of the union, a president coming on and saying, hey, last year I rolled out this policy. Honestly, that was my mistake. I own it. We're going to change course on that. And hey, actually the other party, their proposal, there's components to that I think are really solid. We're gonna kind of lean into that and give it an opportunity to play. I mean, that would be unheard of. I mean, you know, maybe you would need to get somebody that's like a, you know, like a Jocko or something as president to ever own a mistake.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's everything we've done is perfect. I mean, even Biden's State of the Union, it's like, oh my God, dude. Everything we've done is perfect. You know, we're the best president ever and, you know, standing ovations for everyone. And, you know, America has never been better. I mean, that's literally every State of the Union we've ever seen. Right. Yeah. And so there you go.
On Trump's side too, he's still taking credit for the vaccine. I'm like, dude, just shut the fuck up, man. Like, can you really not admit that was a fucking huge mistake? Like, what are you talking about? It's like bragging about rushing the vaccine to market and it's not a conspiracy theory anymore. It's just a conspiracy. Fucking, there's all these vaccine injuries and people are reporting them and they're fucking being suppressed. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know that there's, I haven't seen a politician who really accepts accountability when they're wrong, frankly. Cause I think, you know, maybe that's just the nature of the game. I don't know, but it's very disappointing, frankly. Because if you had a leader like that, that is what we would call toxic leadership in the military, right? Like if you had if you were a commander like that, or if you were a fucking NCO like that, the best thing that could happen is you get drummed the fuck out of the Corps. You know what I mean? Get the fuck out of here. You don't belong here. This is a meritocracy. People's lives are on the line. You can think about it from, it's easy to quantify that statement in the military context, because we're getting into literal gunfights, but people's lives are on the line sociologically and economically as well, right? Like poverty kills people. As poverty rises, infant mortality goes up, so on and so forth. Their literal lives on the line. When it came to the lockdowns and shit, there's about 750,000 to a million privately owned businesses, family businesses that closed forever. They'll never reopen because of that bullshit. You know what I mean? That's somebody's life savings. A million people's life savings are gone. Their business, their opportunity for upward mobility, all the shit, the fucking money they were going to leave, the money and businesses they were going to leave their children, generational mom and pop stuff, right? Like local economy stuff was wiped the fuck out because of this incompetence. I know people don't take it lightly, but it is quite literally a life or death situation.
Yeah. And I think if there's anything we learn, from COVID, it's, you know, and I will, you know, acknowledge in the very beginning, of course, this was an unprecedented thing that none of us had ever dealt with. So like, I think I can give a little bit of grace in the beginning of us just like not knowing what the fuck to do and just like kind of grasping at stuff to you know, mitigate this. You know, first it was like 2 weeks to bend the curve, and then of course the vaccines start getting into the mix. I could see from like President Trump's perspective, if you're getting briefed by some medical team that this vaccine could help mitigate, I mean, he's not a medical professional. You know what I mean? I could see how as a leader you'd say, okay, we need to expedite this. That seems like a solution. But obviously in hindsight now we know some of the issues it created. But I think, you know, more importantly is as a society, we need to realize that in moments like that, that is not the time to squash free speech. Mm. And particularly in the scientific world, that is not the time to limit the scientific method and only, you know, allow people that have a certain belief, you know, add their input to the argument, right? You know, through the scientific method is how we achieve the ultimate truth, right? That's science. So when you have people with PhDs that are, you know, renowned in their field offering viewpoints that are contrary to the mainstream viewpoint that had been established for whatever reason that is, I think we can go into that, but and their views are rejected and they become outcasted from the medical and scientific community. That should raise red flags for us as a society if it ever happens again, because why would we ever squash the scientific method, right? Were there players, you know, in the mix that maybe, and again, this is maybe, I don't know this for a fact, that realize they can make billions and billions of dollars and we're pulling the strings behind the curtain and say, hey, if that guy that has the Harvard PhD, if his opinion gets too, you know, mainstream, this is really going to hurt our operation for getting a, you know, a lockdown rollout, you know, and a vaccine rollout. Okay, we need to shut him up. So you pull on some strings and before you know it, the media won't cover it. He's getting canceled. He's outcasted from community. I mean, there's so many examples of that were happening in real time. And it's like, hey, guys, let's all acknowledge we don't know what the truth is yet, but this is not the time to be not entertaining all of those viewpoints. Like let's let the best view win. And unfortunately, you see that a lot with climate change too. Again, that's still something, you know, that is very emphasized right now. But what a lot of people don't realize is there's a lot of really credible scientists that have some real doubt on the magnitude of man-made climate change and the need to do these drastic curtailments in emissions and all these things. Their voices aren't even allowed to be heard. And you know, unfortunately, on the other side of it, you have the mainstream people that get all the press that have made multiple predictions since the early 2000s that have come and gone and haven't even come close to becoming true. I mean, we're talking the wildest prediction. I mean, look it up. You'll see some of them that like these are the people that are running these councils, right? And then, you know, in 2011, this is going to happen. And by 2016, you're going to see this. And by 2021, cities are going to be underwater. And these things come and go and nothing happens, right? So you would think in a normal scenario, the credibility of that individual would eventually start to be called into question, particularly when there's, you know, other opinions that are quite contrary to that. Yet it doesn't happen, right? Those voices continue to be amplified. They continue to give these doomsday predictions. And guess what? That then allows Congress to put out policy that subsidizes certain industries that allows them to get rich, right? So it doesn't mean, hey, we don't try to take care of the environment. I definitely think like, yeah, we should still take care of the environment and try where we can. But if it's at risk of destroying major industries that drive our country and allow people to heat their homes and things like that, I think that warrants a real scientific discussion, right? Again, just like the COVID thing, it's too big of a deal to get it wrong. So that's just the thing that is honestly really disheartening for me. You know, it's I think just as Americans and as citizens, anytime there's a major viewpoint that's being deliberately squashed, that should really make you question what's really going on here. Because there's probably a lot more to it than, you know, is on the surface.
Yeah, there's I have a razor. I have it goes something like the more the media wants you to pay attention to something, the more you should ignore it. And the inverse is also true. The more they want to dissuade you from looking into something, you should definitely look into that. To your point about the climate, it's a good example because there's a guy, Myron Ebel, who wrote this paper. I think it was like a 2011 or something. And it was like 50 years of climate predictions that never happened. 1967, dire famine by 1975, never happened. 1970, they predicted an ice age by 2000. I'm guessing that didn't happen. I didn't notice it. I mean, there was a movie called Ice Age that came out with that little squirrel running around, but I don't think that was the same thing. another ice age by 2020 or 2030, 2070, that has moved the date around, blah, blah, blah. So it was up until like, up until the late 80s. So from the 60s until the late 80s, it was, there's going to be a new ice age. And then it turned to global warming for some reason. I have no idea what happened in science. But so 1970, it was almost overnight too. So no end in sight to a 30-year cooling trend. That's a 1978 paper. And then within 10 years, temperatures in D.C. will hit record highs over the next 10 years. You know what I mean? It's like, really? It changed that much over the course of a decade? And it just shows you, like, what you're seeing is absolutely true. You know what I mean? I remember the way that the media and the government, even like the United States government, came after Joe Rogan because he was like, I'm going to like this ivermectin stuff has been prescribed to about 80 million people. I'm going to take it because it's antiviral. It has antiviral properties. There's a million fucking papers that show that this is true. Maybe it'll work on this and maybe it won't. Right. But it's not horse paste. Right. So, I mean, they cast him as like a far right conspiracy theorist. He's not in any way right. He's a fucking liberal. Joe's a liberal. He's a classical liberal guy. He's left-leaning libertarian now, probably, is what I would refer to him as, because I think he's probably made a little conversion there. But if you remember when he got COVID, CNN and the Washington Post and a couple of other outlets put a picture of him in an article they wrote, and they fucking desaturated the fucking picture to make him look sicker than he really was. You know what I mean? Like, that is next level propaganda. It is public-private partnership. That's the literal definition of fascism, by the way, is the government reaching into private industry and using the media to fucking trick people into shit. That's what fascism is. I don't think people that are anti-fascist, Antifa, they don't know what the word fascist means or what it's been over the years. But yeah, it's wild times. We live in the dumbest period in human history. We change, and I think it's, you know, you can track it. We changed the, like I said before, we changed social currency from respectability and resilience and kindness to victimhood. And this is the inevitable result of that, right? There's a race to the bottom now. And, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. You can take care of the people around you, but that's always been the case, right? Like the individual has never, and there are exceptions to this, because sometimes one individual or a small group of individuals would do some great things, right? But typically, one individual can only control what's in their perimeter, right? You know, that's just kind of how it works. So and when a critical mass of people do what the right thing, then we're all okay, right? That's how it works. That's not what's happening now, unfortunately. And we're seeing the results of it. Now, we don't have to talk about politics this whole time, because I think.
Sorry about that. Maybe
No. It's what's going on these days. But I think one of the big ways that the individual can make a difference in the aggregate, in the mass of the problem, is to box out the government and box out nefarious actors and whatever they can. And the way you do that is you solve problems before the government shows up. When the government shows up and nobody has their hand out, they have no fucking power there, right? So doing things like starting your own business, right? So you can start your own business and find customers who think and live like you do and service them, because then you can fucking be your authentic self. And anybody has a problem with it, they go fuck themselves, right? Like, Black Rifle's done it. Large business, a very loyal customer base that we've had over the years. we uncancelable, right? There's like a couple hundred dumb dicks on the internet that'll talk shit sometimes, right? But you can't cancel something like this at this point. Your company's the same. It's like a company that's not afraid of saying these are like not in a judgmental way. It's like, these are our values. This is what we believe in, right? And if you don't like it, that's fine. Fuck off, right? But if you do like it, we're here for you. And be very open about that. That is a very good way to insulate the core of America from this existential bullshit that's going on through our country right now. Personal entrepreneurship, individual liberty. Those are the solutions to all this stuff.
Totally, yeah. And I think I'm someone that more recently I've really just had to kind of shut the news off. Now, it's not like I'm out of the fight. I still think it's important that, you know, I'm vocal about things, but it's gotten so insane. You know, it's just like, all right, I'm going to shut the set off and not watch all this BS I see on TV. But I will say, like, the other side of me has a little bit of a, I see opportunity, right? As a guy who's worked his ass off his whole life, type A, you know, and I go get what I want. It's like, okay, let all these people get fucking soft and entitled. I'm going to win even more. And even if you keep changing the rules and villainizing guys like me, it doesn't fucking matter. I'm going to outwork those adaptations. And then, you know, I have a daughter now, like when she's older, what an opportunity she has now, because I'm going to raise her in a way where if you work your fucking butt off, like this Dana White had a great quote on, if you saw it, if you're even half a fucking savage, you're just going to fucking bulldoze all these people. Right. So, you know, part of me is saddened to see kind of the erosion of what's happened, but I also see incredible amount of opportunity because the freaking savage is becoming extinct or at least endangered. And if you're one of those people, man, you know, you can still, you know, get a lot done. And just there's two angles I see this from, but for majority of me, it's just disheartening to see it. You know, I've used this analogy before. We actually did a whole podcast on it. You know, it's like a wagon puller. We call it the wagon puller analogy. Basically, if you could, you know, if society was like a, you know, a wagon, you got the people in the front that are harnessed up, that are pulling the wagon, right? Those are the real contributors. And then you have, you know, maybe some people that are walking alongside the wagon that they're not necessarily weighing it down, but they're not helping, you know, move it forward. And then you have the people that are sitting up in the wagon, making it heavier and relying on the pullers to keep the forward movement. Now, you'd like to think that normally that would be reserved for children and then the elderly, right? Those are people that we are glad to harness up and pull them along, right? Because, you know, that's our duty. Unfortunately, too many people are realizing you can go get a free seat in the wagon and nothing changes. The wagon keeps rolling and, you know, then the irony of that is the people in the wagon start to villainize the pullers, right? That because they're, you know, they're the oppressors somehow. Yet it's like, do you have any idea why the fuck this thing's moving in the first place, right? So you know, people tend that are successful and pay all the income tax and are employing people somehow become the villain in this story. And it's like, who do you think is fucking providing all these resources for all the free shit? Right. And it's just it's disheartening, man, because as more and more people realize you can get a free ride and go sit in the wagon, they're unhooking their harness, man, and they're taking the first opportunity to do it. And the burden on the people in front is getting heavier and heavier. And eventually those people are going to say, fuck this. I'm the only one pulling. Like, what's the fucking point? You know, I don't know. That's just honestly kind of a stupid analogy I made up over a beer one time. And we were like, hey, let's do a podcast on that. We go way deeper on it. I kind of just butchered it there. But the idea is, you know, just that, you know, more and more people are learning that taking the free ride is the way to go. And then the sad irony of all that is the people that are actually still trying to make an honest living and be a contributing member of society are becoming the villains in the process.
Yeah, that's weird that, you know, the contributors are being villainized. Like, where do you think that's going to lead? Right. It's like total societal collapse at some point, but you know, we'll figure it out. Maybe we're more calm about it than other people. Cause you know, if the lights go out, I'll just go start a fire. You know what I mean? Like, it'll suck, but I'm not worried about that shit. tell me about Born Primitive. Like, what made you decide to start? Tell me about the company first, and then tell me what made you decide to start it in the first place.
Yeah, so the company's Born Primitive. We are an apparel brand. We started in fitness apparel. I was kind of a CrossFit dork back in the day, competed at the CrossFit Games. So the brand was kind of born in that space. And then we've expanded outside of just workout apparel. I mean, we have like jeans and flannels. We have our Savage One, which is our training shoe, which is awesome. And we've gotten into even, you know, maternity, swimwear. And then most recently, we just got into our outdoor line and then our tactical line. So, you know, kind of hunting apparel. So kind of extended field stay stuff. So base layers, mid layers, jackets. And then the tactical apparel is kind of your op camis, like where what you'd wear under kit. That was kind of rooted in when I was in the teams. I felt like the gear we were getting issued, the clothing was not very good, and you couldn't move in it. So I kind of took my expertise in, you know, kind of being the end customer and obviously being an apparel guy, and, you know, we rolled out some really good products that I think, you know, meet the demand of what the operator needs. So that's the gist of the company. You know, we grew from, you know, being just me and my former spouse, Mallory, who's our co-founder. We started out of the garage a couple months before I joined the Navy. You know, we've never taken on outside funding. We bootstrapped the whole thing. You know, for the first 5-6 years, it was just me and her. It took over the whole house. We were just scrappy. I mean, I was doing this obviously on the side of me being active duty. And, you know, now we've gotten to the point where we got over 70 employees. We're sold all over the world. You know, we've built a pretty substantial business now. We have some real momentum as a brand. And, you know, I think what makes us a little more unique is, you know, I think making good apparel, like that's got to be, I would consider that an implied task. It's a hard implied task, but you know, the product of course has to nail it. But the real differentiator, and I was telling Evan Hafer this on his podcast, is you have to build, you know, brand equity, right? You have to stand for something, because at the end of the day, that's what you can actually defend. You know, otherwise, you know, I'd be honest, someone could start a legging and sports bra company tomorrow with very low barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. What makes us defendable is, you know, we've spent the last 10 years, standing for what we believe in. And, you know, that's really just honestly, you know, people that embrace personal responsibility and working hard and, you know, the world owes you nothing, you know, kind of that mentality we've already kind of been touching on. And then I think another trait of the brand is just the, you know, unapologetic patriotism and a huge support of those who serve, you know, military and our first responder communities. And we've always been pretty vocal about that and try to use the platform to give back. So we're coming up on, you know, having donated close to $2 million to date. So obviously in the early years, that charitable promise, you know, those numbers weren't as big, but now that we have a real platform, you know, we're cutting some pretty big checks, probably way more than we should be considering, you know, the size of the company we are. But hey, that's one of those things. It's like, put your money where your mouth is. If you're going to say you're about this, you know, you got to walk the walk. So I think by me serving, we have a ton of military spouses and former, you know, veterans and first responders here working, you know, we live it, you know, in these walls. And you know, it's been an absolutely wild ride. I've made every mistake in the book, you know, still making mistakes, but we're really starting to catch our stride, and there's some huge opportunities ahead that we're really excited about. But you know, I think there's major opportunity. I always use Black Rifle as a case study to my team, and they're probably sick of it at this point, but you have to be willing to cut against the grain. And you know, I think that's why Black Rifle has been so successful. It was brilliant. Is, you know, up until Black Rifle came out, there was no coffee company that would really resonate with just normal dudes like you and me, right? You know, you'd go to Starbucks, wherever, and it was just, okay, it was just a product. It wasn't a brand. They created a easy alternative for, you know, particularly a more patriotic pro-Second Amendment audience to, you know, to put their dollars to a company that actually, you know, shares the same values as them. I just thought that was brilliant, and I'm surprised more brands aren't doing that, because I think there's a lot of brands are hesitant. They're afraid to you know, be patriotic or anything like that. And to me, that's absolutely wild. You know, from day one, you know, we've been really consistent in how we roll. You know, we're pretty, hey, take it or leave it approach, and it's that's done really well for us, honestly.
Yeah, and it's not just. It's not just tactical stuff either. I mean, you've got all sorts of stuff. You got beach clothes, you got gym clothes, you got like daily wear stuff. I mean, it's the brand has really expanded over the last couple of years, especially. And, you know, I think is a kind of a testimony to the quality of the products, which is extremely high, but also the quality of the messaging and the brand itself. So, you know, congratulations on all that. It's been, you know, good to watch another company do well in that space, to be honest, because there's so much fucking static and noise out there that's just ridiculous and people get distracted and shit like that. But, you know, again, I'll bring it back to this idea of boxing out the bad actors, you know what I mean? Find people that are supporting the things you believe in and patronize their business. You know, it's the least you can do. So go check out bornprimitive.com, spelled in the way. If you can't figure out how to spell it, I think maybe you shouldn't be shopping online. I don't know.
A lot of people spell it with an A, primitive. It's P-R-I-M-I-T-I-V-E. So that would be one call out. And if you spell it like that, I don't fault you. Yeah, pretty straightforward.
Yep. Yeah, and tell everybody where they can find you and all your other stuff before we get out of here.
I'm just, you know, I'm Instagram at Bear Hanlon, nothing fancy. It's usually just me and my dog and my daughter, you know, shit like that. Nothing crazy. I'm not like an influencer or anything. And then, yeah, bornprimitive.com. And then, you know, same social handles. If you're into hunting or tactical, you can also follow us at Born Primitive Outdoor and Born Primitive Tactical. And there are separate websites for those things, too. If you like want to get more of the tactical vibe, go to bornprimitivetactical.com and bornprimitiveoutdoor.com. And, you know, so check it out. You know, we give back to lots of veteran first responder charities. And, you know, if that's something that's important to you, you know, we got a ton of really cool shit all across the board. Ladies, if you're listening, sports bras and leggings are our go-to. That's kind of what we became known for, honestly, in the early years. And it's still our bread and butter, despite maybe the perception that the brand is some kind of rugged brand. We make our living selling some really good leggings to sports bras, honestly. So check us out.
Yeah, and your joggers, sweatpants are pretty fucking comfy, too, to be honest. If you're a dude, like I wear joggers every day because, you know, why not? But yeah, go check out bornprimitive.com. Check out all their stuff. Check out Bear. Check out the podcast as well, Born Primitive Podcast. You can see the logo in the back for that. You guys get a lot of good episodes. Thanks for coming today, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. And thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.